It is my great pleasure to welcome Bethan Hardison tonight in conversation with Laurie Goldstein, David Ralph, Tracy Reese, and James Scully, as they attempt to dissect, as the title of Guy Trebay's fine piece in the Sunday Times, in the style section of the Sunday Times had it, Why Runaways Fade to White Ignoring Diversity. I don't know if any of you have read the piece. I highly recommend it. I'll read to you the first paragraph. In the days of Blythe's racial assumptions, flesh crayons were the color of white people. Invisible makeup and nude pantyhose were colored in the hues of Caucasian skin. The decision by manufacturers to ignore whole segments of humanity went unchallenged for decades before the civil rights movement came along and non-white consumers started demanding their place on the color wheel. I encourage you all to join our email list to find out the kinds of events we have coming up. This week we have Myra Kullman and I discussing the principles of incertitude with Nico Muley playing the piano. Myra Kullman, for those of you who don't know, is a wonderful illustrator. I did an event with her in the Reading Room, an opera based on the elements of style. I'm sure we broke all the rules of peace and quiet in the Reading Room. Carol Phillips and Ian Baruma, Benjamin Kunkel, The Night Before Halloween, talking about the politics of fear. And then, of course, we have Newt Gingrich on the environment. Newt Gingrich, I'm not sure exactly how that will work itself out, but come and hear him. We have George Soros, a whole day on propaganda and the press, followed by Peter Nadasch, Umberto Eco, who just wrote A History of Ugliness, which is twice as long as his previous book on the history of beauty. Cees Noteboom and Nicholas Kristof talking about Darfur. The evening I think nobody wishes to miss is an evening we haven't yet announced. This is why I encourage you to join our email list. It's an evening with a French psychoanalyst and literary critic who has entitled one of his essays, How to Talk About Books You Haven't Read. I encourage you. Many years ago, a decade ago, I taught a class and I had a student who I'll never forget. He always spoke very much and very wrongly, but it was wonderful. Whatever he said was so interesting, much more interesting than the people who said things that were right. And one day, we were reading Bartleby the Scrivener, and one day I turned to Michael and I said, Michael, have you read Bartleby the Scrivener? And he said, not personally. I would like to thank our partners. We have wine partners at times, Oriel Wines. We have 192 Books, who sells books when they're books to sell. Tonight they're not books to sell, they're issues to debate. And I think very often programs such as this are motivated purely by books. Writer writes book and pays penance by coming to the library to present book. Sometimes it's important to actually air the issues. I often say that my goal here is to come up with an organized web of obsessions. And tonight it isn't books we're coming to talk about, but a very important idea. I would nevertheless like to thank Metro Newspaper, which is our media sponsor for the four live series. In the morning, New Yorkers write to work, read Metro, and are informed and inspired to seek out happenings such as those offered here at Live from the New York Public Library. Debriefing of some of the evenings will be featured and have already been featured in the Metro pages. So get your Metro copy in the morning and you might find out what happened tonight. There will be a Q&A, and I will let Bethan Hardison explain to you how lively she wishes it to be. You will be very much encouraged to ask questions, perhaps even make statements. Now, join me in warmly welcoming Laurie Goldstein, David Ralph, Tracy Reese, James Scully, and the woman first she will come out alone, who made all of this come together, and I gave her a hard time, but I think it was worth it, Bethan Hardison.
Wow, nice, huh? Very nice. Hi, Audrey. I haven't been feeling very well in the last day. I'm thinking about how personal I always think my position of being a revolutionist and how I have the heart for it and I have the spirit for it, but the body seems to be taking a little bit of a hit. But I wanted to tell you, if I start to tank, support me. Okay, don't let me fall down here. I want to thank especially Live at the New York Public Library for housing this discussion and believing in its importance. And the Metro newspaper, thank you for having the vision to connect the dots. I'm going to be a little wavy, so, you know, understand. Photographer Randy Brooks, this gentleman I didn't even meet who gave us the photographs you see just to sort of like give me some energy about what's been going on. Also a special thanks to Guardian UK, Rosemary Feidelberg of the Women's Wear Daily, Walter Green of the Caribbean News, Robin Givon, Washington Post, and Guy Trebe of the New York Times. Thank you for being inspired to write the word. We may have given you content, but you have truly given us heart. To all of our pioneer soldiers who with their spirits pushed me to do something and make whatever could happen, happen. If they are not here tonight, they are here in spirit and they've asked me to tell you so. Eric, I was saying I'm thinking of you and there you are. And thank you, the audience, for being here. This is an onslaught of a revolution and hoping to bring about a radical change. That's the point of this whole thing. And for this evening, it started about a decade ago. It seemed like it was time to start having these conversations because a whole decade had gone by. And a decade to me is like a child's life, you know, when you can have something going on. When you can have something going on like this for so long and you look up, two years is okay, but when it starts to be like 10 years, it's like a long time. So we felt the need to sort of like start having conversations, and the way to do it the best to sort of like push a little bit for change is to have public speaking. Our first gathering was on September 14th, and we felt that that was great because we initiated something. We got our energies all together. But what happened next was to have the opportunity to be here at the library live, and it felt like something that could be even deeper, because then I could bring some of the industry players up on stage, let you hear how they think, let you know how they work, let you see how they work together and what they're responsible for and not responsible for. But I need your feedback as well. So what I would like to do is start the conversation, and then at some given point, I'm going to look into the audience and start the audience to have to come into the conversation. Please understand that at some given point, there are rules to this, because I will manage it. I just want to make sure that we don't find ourselves talking over each other, because I don't stand for people talking over each other at all. And please don't find yourself talking when others are speaking and have the floor, because I don't like that either. And if you can, we love to hear your questions. We love to hear your answers. We even love to hear what you think. But don't find yourself talking all about yourself and not about the topic, because sometimes people get a little bit like, this is my moment. You understand how that works, right? So if we can, I'm sorry, I'm just waving to people and things, you know. It's just so sweet. Hey, I'm so nice to see so many nice faces. That are such a nice mix of crowd. But do understand that that's the most important thing, because to interact with an audience is very important to me, because I believe in that more than panelists, participation kind of things. The most important thing is to hear what you have to say, because I think an audience brings so much more to a topic. All right? So with that, I want to tell you also a few things that has always seemed to have been, and I said this before, and I think some of the people here are newer, but I've been asked to repeat this. A few of what I call my peeves about our industry. And I want to say these very quickly, because time is very valuable, and we've got this opportunity, and I don't want to lose too much of it. and good time goes by very quickly when we're talking. But I've mentioned before that my pet peeves have been, number one is oftentimes image makers not having the eye to determine black beauty. These are the things that I find disturbing about the industry as it's falling today. You understand what I'm talking about? Okay. Deciding one top working girl of color at a time is sufficient. Three, hearing that statement that black covers don't sell. Four, that black models having to compete against each other, happily fitting into the other, alone and being encouraged to do so by their reps. Five, model reps saying, I already have a black model or two. Six, fashion designers not feeling self-conscious about their lack of diversity. Seven, image makers not making a conscious effort to demand black images continually. Eight, model agencies holding their black models from being in black image magazines. Nine, making it so hard to get black models work, agents get beat down and lose their drive. And number 10, celebrity blacks coming into the fashion industry and their nouveau riche style, not recognizing the problem, just enjoying the lights and media acceptance. All right, don't say amen, but amen. All right. Our participants today are, and please hold your applause till the end, Maury Goldstein, David Ralph, Tracy Reese, and James Scully. Now, before I do anything, I have to have a swig of water. So, forgive me. Hello. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
That's a very hard thing to handle, is being in front of a podium. You feel like you have to be all correct. I'm not feeling good, but I'm feeling real good with y'all. So I appreciate you. Thank you very much, my darling friend. Well, don't look so serious. Okay, we're going to start the conversation by just letting you know a little bit about each person. So, Tracy, you can identify yourself and tell us what you do in this industry of fashion.
I'm Tracy Reese. I design clothes. I have three collections, Tracy Reese, Plenty by Tracy Reese, and Plenty Frock.
Okay, and Mr. Scully?
My name is James Scully, and I'm a casting director for fashion designers and advertising companies. For the last 5 years I've been on my own. Prior to that, I was a casting director under Tom Ford at Gucci Group for 10 years. And before that, I was a bookings editor at Harper's Bazaar magazine.
And I'm David Ralph, typical, turned agent, now men's director at New York Model Management.
I'm Laurie Goldstein. I'm a fashion stylist and consultant that has changed from just styling and advertising to working with designers, following the whole process from design to advertising and shows.
Okay. I want to ask something. This is maybe rude. I don't mean to be rude. But are you going to snap pictures like this the whole time? Okay. Because it's got me so distracted. You know, when you're a kid from Brooklyn and people start taking pictures, you just start staring, you want to get ready. And he's not even snapping me, you know? So, okay, that's all right. I guess we'll just move along. Don't mind me. I don't mean to embarrass you, but go ahead and do what you got to do. Okay. Okay, but how long? About 2 more minutes. Okay. All right. So I just want to talk a little bit about the fact of how we have come to this place today where times have changed. And you've seen the times have changed. I mean, I find it's kind of difficult in the sense that we have the lack of what I call the black image. And she's so important to me, not because I'm black, but because I think globally it affects everybody when you have it so lopsided. But at this given point in time, I think you all are in the business. You all know how it is. You do one thing or another that affects your job, and you also affects what we see one way or the other. Can you just tell me a little bit, and I'm going to start with James, because James has the most to say, about how you actually feel it's gotten to this place? And I mean, I'll give you a lead. I hate to lead you, but I'm going to lead you. It may be because of how designers take a position in things.
I've been doing this for over 20 years, and I've sort of been through all of these last big movements in fashion. And I don't want to name names or use examples, but one of the examples I will use is that having worked in Milan a lot, that is just in general a tough city to work in. And I feel like all the years that I worked at Gucci, I was fortunate enough to work for someone who, his creed was just bring me a beautiful girl. He didn't care where they came from, which left the door open to me to find incredibly beautiful girls, whether they were black or Asian or white or Indian or Hispanic. And in a way, it was just a great missive because it allowed me to be incredibly creative and bring just anyone that I felt was beautiful to him. And he really, really appreciated that beauty, specifically if it was black beauty or Indian beauty. I mean, he liked the idea that they came from different walks of life and they could all be this Gucci woman. And I feel, other casting directors didn't really exist up until that point either. Most designers had done things on their own with their own vision, and I'd say since that time, casting directors and stylists have become very important in shaping the way people think. 20 years ago, Calvin Klein did his own shows, and it was his own staff, and it was their own mind. Now they have a team of stylists and casting directors who have very different ideas, sometimes even more powerful than the designer that they're working for, or as powerful as the designer, so they hold a lot of weight as far as their opinions. And Tom was incredibly open, and casting people, stylists, a lot of people watch what other people do, so it was a great launching pad for girls. So if we launched a new girl, it was almost instant magazine work and other work, and they would go to Paris and be very desirable because they were in that show and they were one of 14 girls, and it was an incredibly special way to highlight any beautiful girl. And in particular, he liked using black models and he liked using different ethnic models, and it was a great thing because girls who normally would have a tough time working in Milan always knew that there would be a great chance for him to see them at Gucci and to be in that show and to go to Paris and to get magazine bookings from that. What changed, I feel like, since he left the business is that the next designer, at the same time who was equally as powerful, but sort of then became the next wave of what people were watching was Prada. And one of the things that particularly changed at Prada was that everyone got younger, which for me was a problem. But the other thing is the models became less and less about the personality of the model and just a girl to hang clothes. It became very colorless and blank and personality-less. And I just feel like since that was a very, very important thing for people to watch, everyone, like Lemmings, completely followed suit. And as these just plain, boring, young, faceless, wide-eyed girls came in, all the diversity and just things that were interesting about each person as an individual went out the window because it became about one vision and one thing, and anything that was individual just sort of disappeared with that. And I feel like that was a very powerful element to why this kind of disappeared. And I feel like any girl with personality in the last 10 years has kind of gone to the wayside with that.
Well, we can't deny that, can we? It's funny. I have this fight about, what is my real objective here? What is my real objective here? I'm sorry, the cameraman's mad at me. What is my real objective here? And sometimes, often, it is the most obvious thing is that it's lopsided, black to white, and that's kind of like naughty. But what bothers me a lot is about the designer not liking a model, and that seems to be my issue. That I don't like the fact that they don't like models anymore. And models were always, back in the day when I used to watch fashion magazines as a kid, like when I was 10 years old, 17 magazine was my magazine, but when I got a chance to sneak and look at the little small little bunches of Vogue, there were models that had names, Dovima, models said, Iman, I'm sorry, not when I was 10, but you know what I mean. She's just right there with me. But the fact of it is that these names that stuck with designers and people that, they presented these girls, and these women really were the people who presented the collections. This was a very important connection between a designer and its model. when you no longer have that, a lot of things change. So I look on this end, and I want to say, you know, do you find, too, because you do a lot of the work with, you help to work with designers, and you help them to find their way. Because when I was a model, we didn't have designers who had assisting people. It was the designer. We've gotten, like, you have a husband and wife, and then you have someone in between that makes them have a relationship. But that person that makes them have the relationship lives with them. That would be between a husband and wife. That's what a designer and a model is like for me. There's a husband and wife. I was a model, so you know that's why I feel that way. But it's the truth if you had the experience. Designers did that, and Calvin did that, and all the designers we came along with did that, and then a time changed, and it became something different. And Lori is someone who's perfect that was asked to come to consult to designers as well. And I think that's a very interesting job as well that has begun to happen since times have changed. So Lori, explain to me what you think is the reason why things have changed, or how do you feel you fit into that picture that's changed that position?
Well, the business has changed, first of all. It's a lot bigger than it was. It's definitely not just, you know, picking 20, 40 outfits and putting them on a runway. I mean, it's a collection. There's a lot more to be said. And I do disagree that the models don't care, the designers do not care about, you know, who the models are. They care very much. It's, you know, why it's changed, it's different. I mean, when I looked at, I was just looking at this special that was this Halston special. I mean, it was like theater. It was so different. I feel like, you know, we've become very homogenized in a way. It's become such a huge business. There were, you know, maybe 15, 20 shows back then. There's 100 shows to go to. It's become very much like, you know, this rhythm of, you put the girls out, you do a show, you cast it, it's, you know, it's a white runway, and it's just very homogenized. It's very different. It was more intimate back then. But I don't know that that necessarily has anything to do with, you know, the color of the model's skin. I mean, I don't look at girls that way, and the designers that I work with, I don't feel that they look that, you know, they think about that. I think
that's
that,
so good. What do you think you look for?
I mean, every designer that I work with has a very specific look that they want. I mean, if it's...
But they're not looking for black girls.
But they're not looking for white girls either.
Oh. I mean,
but they're not.
Don't,
I mean,
start.
I really,
but they are looking for white girls. They're looking for models, right? I mean, really, honestly.
There are different things. They're looking for strong girls that walk very strong, if it's a certain type of designer. Or they're looking for this Prada-esque girl that does get lost in the clothes, and that it's more about the clothes. I mean, when I'm casting for, you know, when I'm working with Carolina Herrera, it's a very different process than when I'm working with Vera Wang. I mean, every designer has a vision, and it's more about the type of personality of a girl than the color of the skin, and I do believe that.
Okay, good. So if that's the case, if they're looking for personality, is it the fact that when you receive packages from model agencies, do you find that there's a lack of ethnic girls in
Absolutely.
The package? Yeah. See? All right, so here we go. It's your turn. I mean, it's not so much the factor of how it works out that way, but in the essence of it, there are not a major presentation of girls. As James and I were saying, he said, my goodness, Bethany, we were on the phone today. He said, there's so many great black males out there. He's casting for a big commercial house. And he said, there's so many great guys. And I said, yeah, but I don't think they're getting work. He said, really? Because there's so many good ones compared to the black female model. And I agree with that because I see a lot of great guys, but I don't see a lot of great girls. There are a lot of girls out there being thrown against the wall, so that's why it's interesting when you say that, because I don't know how many girls that are competitive to their white counterpart are great. So in your case...
It's the same thing. I mean, in defense of Lori here, I think it's more about the personality. I mean, if a guy walks or a girl walks into the agency, I mean, I don't go, are you black or are you white, whatever. It is all about the personality that makes me, you know, jump to the next level with them. My issue with the whole industry is that I think that over the years, because it is primarily like a white-driven industry, I just find it sad. I mean, I'm talking about the advertising world here. I just find it sad that I think we've become, as black people, very, very complacent with the fact that we're kind of like pandering to their, what they want. I mean, you look at that. I mean, like, look at the big girls of today. I'm looking at Leah. I'm not talking about someone like Kani from our agency, who's, like, very, very different and very, very African-looking. But, I mean, like, Leah and all them, basically, they're just, like, white girls who've just got a little tint on them. You know?
I don't agree.
I mean, they've got the... I think they've got, like fairly small features, everything. There's nothing really oomph about them. I mean, they're not the Alec Weck of yesterday. Alec Weck was, like, a...
She's like Kani.
Sorry?
She's like Kani.
Exactly. And I think there are less of those girls around today.
Well, that's interesting you say that, because I, you know, there used to be a time, I don't know, maybe the audience will, you know, feel that same way. Hold it for a second, but I just want to keep rolling around with this for a second. But a lot of times you hear people say, you know, if a girl works well, you know, she's just a white girl dipped in chocolate. Well, they used to say that about Iman, and I think that's a little bit of a cop-out in a way, because I think that we have to keep remembering we have diversity about our own looks, and I appreciate the fact that we all are different, but I think the hot different one is as good as the bad different one, and I think that what happens in this industry right now, we haven't come with the great black girls now.
Yeah, but another thing here I'm going to say. How many models out there right now have got, like yourselves, have got naturally curly hair? They're not. They're all straightened. They're all straightened. They're all pandering to the same. And if they're not, straightening their hair, they're wearing wigs.
Yeah, but it's not even straightened hair. It's called, what is it called?
Weave.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
you can tell I know, right?
I mean, where's the pride gone, do you know?
I mean, the fact of it is, Okay. Somebody had something to say. You want to say it real quick?
Well, I'm not a model, but I have natural hair. I just get a blow dry every now and then because I want something different.
Okay, good. Yes, dear. No, I'm not saying that. No, I'm saying good, good.
I take very object highly when you call somebody like Leah that she looks like a white woman mm-hmm. with a touch of brown, because I come from that part of the world. Mm-hmm. Africa does not all look like
I'm not. I'm not saying. Okay, go on. Go on.
Africa is a continent, and like Europe, where English girls look different than the French girls look different than the Swedish girl, we are the continent. We look different. Each country mm-hmm. looks very different. And I am more black than any black girl that is in this country or anything, and I don't have a drop of white in me. So I take offense when somebody says to me that I look like a white woman
okay.
with a little bit of color.
Okay, here's my retort.
Okay,
here's my retort.
Okay, here's a retort. Okay. But I want you to know, I have white blood in me.
Okay. Here's my retort.
She's okay? Right.
I'm not taking away the fact that you... I mean, I think you look very beautiful. You always have been, and I think you were like an icon in the industry. However, my point was not that she looks like that. I'm just saying I think it's pandering to the white advertising world. That's what I'm saying.
But I do disagree, because in the advertising world, mm-hmm. if you look at it, you have very different and a lot of white models who look different from each other.
Exactly.
So the whole intention of about models is not for all of us to look like Alan
right.
Beck, and not all of us to look like
absolutely.
Beck.
I agree with you.
There is a diversity of a group of people. This is taking really the shortcut of saying black models are not, we only have one look at a time. Like saying there can only be one model working
mm-hmm.
at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So if you say Alec Webb and bikini, does that mean that only that
no,
looks
no, not at all. Work? Not at all. It's like what I'm saying exactly is over and over again is because I think it is pandering. those got, it's like, what's her name? That has her own show.
Tyra.
Okay, no, let's talk about that. Okay. Okay, I got your point. Okay, I got the point. I got it.
Well, and I would make a point that when I worked at Harper's Bazaar Leah in the beginning of her career, when I first met her, one of the things that I found beautiful about her was A, that she was black, but B, also that in the context, she could have been black, she could have been Egyptian, she could have been Indian. There was just, she just was amazing looking to me, period. And for me, I mean, it wasn't even pandering. When I worked at that magazine and I proposed her to a lot of photographers who now shoot her and say that they love her, they clearly saw her as black. And there was nothing about her, you know, she was black. And for some people, that was the beginning of my being shocked at how, for some people, that was a problem. And I found that more upsetting than, and at a time, I mean, I missed 10 years ago, even less than that, when you had a million different girls in the room. You had Veronica Webb, who was black, and you had Lorraine Pascal, and you had, I mean, there were just, I mean, I would do Todd Oldham shows, we had 10 girls, and it was not because they were black, it was just because every one of these girls bought something different to each outfit.
Right.
We needed the, we needed the character.
But you know, it's interesting, as he says this, and as Iman makes her point about it, it's interesting that I have an another agency owner who told me at the time that she felt that Leah was one of the magazine's sort of way of keeping black girls out of the business, because that was their answer, that it was that she was easy enough to look at, that she didn't have a lot of personality. I know what he means by it, because I know I'm explaining you a little bit more. But I know what he means by it, because that's why we sometimes say, oh, Chanel Iman, that works well too, because she sort of like fades right into the rest of them. They all just fade into each other. You know, I know what you mean by it, but at the same time, that was one great girl who is definitely, like you say, totally continent of Africa, totally pure-blooded, and I use the example of myself being, pardon me, having white in me, because this is her point is so good. We're supposed to be African descent. We're mixed. No one looks at me as being anybody who could be white, but yet Iman is completely 100% African.
So go ahead. Isn't it your job as an agency? Because the complaint now is, as you put it was that there is not really a hot black model that is the counterpart of the Caucasian model.
The Caucasian models were working. What I'm saying is that your point was that there are no hot black models now that could actually compete with the Caucasian models. So whose job is it to find those hot black models? Because they do exist out there.
No, it is ours.
It's your job,
yeah,
really,
absolutely.
To find them, right?
I'm not disagreeing.
And then to expose them to the editors,
absolutely,
and the magazines,
absolutely,
and
totally
the designers.
I totally agree with
and
you.
That's,
yeah.
And as she says that, I'm going to get you too. You keep your hand up, though. Don't if it gets close, keep pushing it back up. The fact of it is, as you say that, that's what the difficulty is, because as designers, agents as himself try to push those images out there, it's very difficult to a market. It's so hard and has such resistance. It breaks the energy of the agents down. It really does, because there's such a hard resistance. I don't know how I was able to do it, but I think it was a way because of it was our time to do it. And even though people say, well, you know, your time is so different. And I was saying that our last meeting on the 14th of September, I was saying, I'm looking at you now, Michaela. I was saying that, you know, it was different in my time. Yeah, it was different. But I realized that I broke the barriers, too. I was getting on the phone saying things to people that nobody ever heard before. I was saying, you know, I'm sorry, but you got to see this girl. And using my white, because I had white girls and black girls, using my white girls to get the black girls in. But I did have a great girl. When I believed I had a great girl, I had a great girl. You know that. I had a great girl. A lot of, you know that. No, it's true. I had a great girl. Well, you did book them. But the fact of it is that what the point of it is for me right now, sometimes the great girl does have too much personality for what's going on now, and that's what they're saying, that the great girl. But that time has got to change. I mean, this is bad now. This is not great. I know this girl back here, and then you, Harriet.
I don't work in the industry, so I'm curious as to what you...
Just a moment. I'm sorry, I didn't say one thing that I should have said. Because we are being filmed and we are being audioed, you know what I mean, the mics are going around, so you may pop up, but we're going to get the mic to you as fast as possible.
Okay, so I'll repeat that.
So we're going to be here all night.
Okay. I don't work in the industry, so I'm curious as to, for example, I think Iman is one of the greatest, and I hear you all saying that you see great guys or there aren't enough great girls, and I'd like to know what makes a great girl.
Oh, you got to just see it.
Okay.
Yeah.
You can never,
it
you can never, yeah, it just says it to you. And people you would say quite often, well, what you know, what, she's so great. And there's a lot of nice-looking girls, but that's not a model. You know, that, and see, in my race, I have there's so many beautiful black girls, so many African-American girls, girls from America. That's what I'm fighting to get back out. But there are not a lot of great models of that ilk. That's my problem.
Here.
Well, that's your opinion. That's the difference between the eye of one and the eye of another. And that's the difference. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, it's the industry standards have changed across the board. I mean, it's like it used to be, I mean, you could be a great girl. You'd walk in, you had that spark, you knew it. And today it's like, how tall are you, the thinness, the age. I mean, everything has changed so much across the board. And I do want to say that personalities right now with models are different. They're, it's not like some amazing supermodel walks in. It's like that whole era of like that star quality is not what we're in right now. We're in this era where it's like, you know, it almost is. You want everybody to kind of look the same. I mean, girls have gotten a lot younger, a lot thinner, a lot taller.
But that's Eastern Europe.
It's very Eastern Europe. But this is a standard that has changed. It used to be every body type wasn't the same. Every model didn't have to look the same. They were definite personalities. Everybody, there were characters. I mean, we have become very homogenized in our thinking across the board of what a model should look like. And I think we're in this period of that. And I think
that
has a lot to do
with it. Go ahead.
Can I say, I think we've also become lazy in our thinking about what's beautiful and how to accentuate different types of beauty. And I was saying to someone the other day, I remember going to a menswear show, and, you know, it's so much more restrictive what is shown and how it can be shown. It's not like women's wear where we have such free reign. And I noticed that the clothing and the outfits and the colors were selected in style to complement each model. It was like, you know, and this was way back. I mean, Tyson was on the runway, and I just remember him coming out in like a beautiful cream turtleneck, and it accentuated his chocolate skin and, you know, his sets, his ties with the shirt, with the jacket. Everything was tailored to accentuate his beauty. And with each model, I noticed the incredible attention to detail in that particular show. I haven't been to many men's shows. But I think with women's shows, so many designers are not thinking that way. They're thinking, I want the girl who looks, you know, like my sketch, or I want one look because I have one look for my collection. They're not thinking about, you know, the world and the diversity of their customer base and how to complement and accentuate different types of women. And I think it's lazy. And it's not modern.
They're in a rut.
Every designer who thinks they're so modern, and for every editor who thinks they're cutting edge, are you considering what is modern? Is it modern in 2007 going into 2008 to discriminate on your runway, to not embrace, you know, the diaspora people? This is, you know, we have a broad audience that we're selling to, or that we hope to sell to, and to not address that on the runway, I think, is so old-fashioned. And this is the business of fashion, and it's old-fashioned.
Yeah, well said. Well said. Oh, yeah. Yes, dear. Now, you know, sorry, you want to repeat that?
that?
You can make it short.
Yeah, I was just saying that are these decisions pushed by economics? Is it that we don't want the supermodels anymore who won't get out of bed for $10,000, that we want a scale so that all the models are paid a certain amount of money, and if they're all generic and they don't have personalities, we save money, and the people who suffer, of course, would be the minorities because they stand out.
All right, so... I want to answer that too a little bit, and then you can do it as well. It's not the economics that's affecting the design decisions. It is corporate and commerce driven. That is true, and it's changed the whole feed because houses are being bought by big corporations. It is something that I know as I work in design and I come from designers, and I know that the one thing we all love and wanted was to have
our girls look like illustrations. That's very true. And, you know, that's what you would wish. It's just so happened that when the Eastern Block wall went down, and they could have the opportunity to go to search and find models that would come out of Eastern Europe, and they could find them, those girls are there. That's what has changed one thing for the thinking of that. The girl, you know, you could say all you want. I know you believe it, and you're in it when they're doing it, and I know you're right, maybe, but in my head, I don't believe it. That the fashion designer really cares about the model, because I don't see it. You see, when I see, I really mean it. I know when you select them, say, yeah, this is Mary, you like her account, whoever, that may happen. But what really hasn't happened is that there's no more the relationship between the designer and the model. And that's a very valuable thing. When the model has that relationship with the designer, it affects the designer. So, of course, he's not as involved anymore. And when you have outside people who do their job and they go and they're within a trend, it's not like someone like Gaultier who would say, I'm sorry, I want to have, you know, a global expression of my collection. That's very important. You don't have many people doing that anymore because they're in a rut. I mean, fashion's in a rut. Beautiful clothes, but they're in a rut. James?
What I do want to say is, unfortunately, what you just said is becoming a product, and not necessarily even on a race level, it is becoming a product of this kind of nameless, faceless, and not having girls with character, because what is happening now in Milan is, because of certain houses bringing in very young girls who don't cost anywhere near as much as a top model who I would prefer to have in my show, now all of a sudden you can have an entire cast of 15-year-old, 16, 17-year-old girls for half the price of what you could have. And it's actually worse, because this is what's happening now. And in Milan, even the girls who are considered big models now are all skipping, or they go in for one show who will pay them a lot of money, because it used to be that everyone paid that kind of money. And again, it is becoming an after effect of what's happened now.
I just want to do one thing. I want to go to Harriet, because she had a hand up before for a while.
Hi, I'm Harriet Cole, creative director of Ebony Magazine. In listening to this, there are two things that have come to mind. This nameless, faceless thing, in my view, is coming even more because celebrities have become the model. So whereas fashion magazines, lifestyle magazines, you know, a few years ago, the time of the supermodel, supermodels were on every cover. Supermodels were driving sales.
Well, just top models. Forget the word
supermodel. Well, okay, fine. Yeah, top models.
Yeah.
Now, celebrities are driving sales. And so...
But that's on magazine covers. We're talking about the girl in the runway. We're talking about the girl in editorial.
But my point is, I believe that in part, when the models look the same, they are somewhat hangers. They're hangers for celebrities to look and see, oh... Or a stylist to look and say, oh, this is great.
So they identify to the dress and not to them.
It is a thought that I have begun to have because in the magazine, you know, many of the people type magazines that show celebrities and on the blogs, et cetera, that's what you're seeing all the time. The celebrities in Tracy's clothes or whoever's clothes. The other piece that I think is really important, and it speaks to what Iman was talking about, we can't forget racism in America that makes us believe that the one drop means something different from however many other drops somebody might have, that the darker skin, kinky hair black woman isn't beautiful. Those of us who grew up here have that as part of our cultural heritage, even if we are actively trying to reject it. We don't know what Africa is, most of us. Most of us don't realize how rich and beautiful and diverse and incredible that continent is. So we're looking at African models in the same way as we look at ourselves. Imagine if we embrace what we see from this incredible continent that we claim to say we really are beautiful every way that we are, and we embrace it. We do not buy products from people who don't respect us.
No.
And you know, but truly, if we decided we're worth it, and we can love ourselves, respect ourselves in the same way as our African brothers and sisters do. And Africans
well, they
say
don't,
a
we
continent,
have a different history.
But as a continent, mm-hmm. And that's something that we don't speak to enough.
Okay, that's a good point. I got you. Wait, just wait, because you have a very sweet little tiny voice. I just got to wait for the mic.
I'm not that familiar with the whole industry, but when I look at it, I see
say
it
say your name, and you can, if you have no big old place you come from, it's cool. Just say
Christina
your name.
And I come from Christina. The R&L group, yeah. And that's about that. But anyway, I always kind of looked at designers and collections and as something that's a show and it's a piece of art and it's they're just kind of expressing themselves through something. And it seems like the model is a huge part of how they're trying to represent their clothing and express themselves. And if they're only using one type of model, what does that say about what designers are doing? It's like they're not using some form of expression that they could, or that, like you said, they're being lazy, or they're just, because if you're using all these colors and fabrics and music and everything else to kind of differentiate yourself from everyone else, why wouldn't you differentiate yourself through the people you're choosing to represent yourself?
Well said, Christina. Well said. Good for you. Well, that's what I feel. No, I'm with you on that. I want to say something, but so many people want to say something too. He's been hanging longer.
Hi, my name is Lanier Long, and I'm a contributor to AmberMag.com.
Hi, Lanier.
We've been sort of complaining about the lack of black models, and I think we sort of overlooked that we possibly had the biggest season ever at Fashion Week. You know, mainly because of Chanel Iman, who walked almost 30 shows, probably breaking a record.
I don't like onesies.
I know, but also when you look at Heather Red had 10, Heather Red had 10, B. Michael had 10, Gotex had 7, Diane Furstenberg had 7. I never saw that many black girls. I've been going to the shows for like 7 years.
Come January.
Come January?
Come January. Come back January.
Oh, okay. So see if it changes at all.
See if
and then also, I think we don't praise the designers that do use them. Like, we should, you know, tell Diane von Furstenberg, great, you're using
these
people.
We did.
And also, Saks.
No. Okay. He's reading from some.
No, listen. Saks Fifth Avenue did a 24-page advertising with all black girls.
Yes,
totally. 24 pages. Now, did Essence or anybody send them, you know, a little note to say, oh, great, you used some black girls. 24 top models, all through the best designers. And we need to just praise them when they do use them.
We do, and I think you're very right about that. The acknowledgement. We did, in September 14th, we spoke on Heatherette, Diane von Furstenberg. We did speak, and we always will speak about everybody who does. Advertisers are on point. Advertisers know exactly who they're talking to. They're talking to their consumers, and that's why commercial advertising is really on point. And that's you're right to bring that point up. I'm sorry, young man.
I'm Jared. I'm a manager of a salon. And my point, I think, that is maybe they're afraid of sexuality of the black woman. I think we mentioned how black men tend to get a lot of play in terms of runway. I think
that. No, we don't. They don't.
Well, in terms of, like, they mentioned how society, they're more used to using black men because I think a sex appeal appeals to that. I think that when I see runway shows of black women, there's the personality, I think, tends to equate to almost their sex appeal. Same for Latina models also. I think that, you know, for the ones from Eastern Europe, they're not sexy. And I think
you say sex, you got to change another word. They're
well,
having
not
a
sexy,
big comment.
But I'm not
they're
sexy.
Having a
I
moment
mean,
here.
Like, but I think there's a society. I think they're afraid of, you know, the
a
black woman.
Say personality.
Well, personality to me is a cop out. I think what does that mean, personality?
Use
think,
it. Believe me, it's working better.
Okay. Well, I think that
secret code word.
Okay. Well, personality wise, I think that before I think designers weren't afraid of the model's personality. Because, but now I think there's a power to it. And I think that, you know, when the models, they're younger, they're not women, they don't have women's bodies, they're not afraid of that. But when women, especially black women.
It's just a trend. It's a huge, long-winded trend. It's not that deep. Don't give them that much credit. It's not that deep. It's just an era of a trend that this is what we're going to remember. What is this, the 2000? We consider this 90s? This is not 90s. This is 2000? I'm so lost. 2000? What would that era be? So Stefan was talking to me about that earlier, about what we think about the era. Can you pass the mic down to this young lady? I'm sorry. Hi.
Good evening. My name is Yvette Richardson. I'm a personal wardrobe consultant. I still think this, that we keep using, oh, the industry is homogenized. That's another cop-out. If it's a nameless, faceless person selling the clothes, why can't they be black?
No,
why can't they be Latino?
Well, let me just answer that very quickly. To say that it's a cop-out, it's not a cop-out, it's a reality.
No, I mean it's a reality, but it's like an excuse.
No, it's an expression.
I just feel
you
like
don't
it's
like
something
it.
To lean
I don't
on.
Like it, but it is an expression.
That, oh, it's homogenized, so this is why we don't use people of color. And to also say that, oh, how many women straighten their hair? My mother looks like you, very much so.
Right.
Is it to say I'm less black or look less black? What's black looking?
Right.
I don't look like Alec Weck, but I am black, and white people know I'm black. I consider myself black all day, every day.
Well, I got your point.
And I would love to see people that look like me, whether my hair is straight, curly, blonde, red, on the covers of magazines, being equally represented as a black woman, just like any Eastern European white girl. White girls started using weaves. They taught us how to weave our hair, so it doesn't make me less black.
What were you saying?
I'd like to see that too, but I just read something today, and this is some statistics on black models and fashion editors for this month, October 2007. Marie Claire had one black girl in the six. She was a solo for six pages. W had a girl one out of one page out of 20. Vogue had none. Harper's Bazaar had none. Glamour had none. Cosmopolitan had none. Allure had none. Lucky had none. And Elle had none. And you know what? At the end of the day, I mean, as James would know, I mean, the girls that they put on the runway, they actually choose from the pages of the magazines. If they're not in the magazines, then they can't go on the runway.
That's what I want to say to you, Christina. When you were speaking about it before, it was interesting. That was my point. Hey, Janelle. That was my point I wanted to bring up. I said, as you were speaking about that, I was going to say, it really comes back to editorship, too, because designers also have a lot of pressure from editors and powerful magazines. So whether we like it or not, that's where it really all comes down to, too, because if the power of a magazine said, listen, you know, this one, that one, I want to see some black girls. You know, I was saying that Fox television network president, said in March, I was out in Los Angeles and read the Los Angeles Times, and he said that he was going to refute any production company who would come to his network wanting to have anything on his network that didn't reflect something black, whether it be a black storyline, crew. He needed to see something black. He said, at this stage, he's sick of it, and we need to start being responsible. I was so impressed with this man, and I thought, knowing that we were one day going to have this conversation, that's the point. You have to take a point of responsibility because it's an imbalance. It's rude. At this stage of the game, we know that the history of this country doesn't allow for us to reflect things this way. But yet we do it, and we get away with it only in fashion. So that's the reason why we're here talking about this, and this is one thing I wanted to say. When you work as a designer, do you think that, you know, I mean, obviously, Tracy, you do what you do your way and do the best you can. Do you ever feel any pressure that you must sort of, like, toe the line a little bit?
Well, you definitely, when you say you want to use models that are in magazines, that's definitely going to be a plus, you know, on your runway. But at the same time, it's your show.
Yes.
It's your show. It's your money. It's your expression. And, you know, that has to come first. At least for me, it does. But I'm a woman of color. It's important for me to have a diverse runway. You know, that's important to me. Someone who's not of color, you know, they can say that they don't know.
So they have to have.
But I think the idea of, you know, a forum like this is for us to all say, you need to notice, because even if it's not reflective of you personally, it is reflective of the people who want to buy your clothing.
We also had this discussion on the 14th, which is where the discussion got into hot water, and I think the next important level of this discussion is that my other feeling is in this whole last 10 or 15 years of casting directors and stylists and people coming from other parts of the world, most of the magazines that are edited right now, especially American magazines, are edited by people that are not American. And I don't want to make any generalizations, but I just feel like having worked with a lot of these stylists and these editors and these people, is it cultural that they don't want black people in their magazine? Because when I think of the time when I would open up magazines as a boy, and especially American Vogue, and I'm not blaming Anna Wintour or anything because she does represent black girls, but literally, you know, every month, you could open up a Vogue and there was always a black girl every month. And it wasn't because it had
Well, let me explain that. Add to that. That was because of the pressure of American Elle. When American Elle came along, perfect.
But before this.
No.
No. This, I'm talking late 70s, early, like in my youth, the things that inspired me up until before Elle. You know, I mean, literally, you know, you'd have a single girl black story, which never happens anymore. You'd have, you know, I said this before, you know, from 1979 to 81, Peggy Dillard had 5 American Vogue covers. That's a lot of cover for a model. It's a lot of cover for a black girl, but don't say they didn't sell. You know, Louise, Cherry Belafonte, I mean, they just came and they came and they came. You know, they were in every month. You know, you'd open a Vogue, you'd have stories with Sheila Johnson, Wanaki, and Iman all in the same story. You know, it's like, why is it different now? Like, that's the I mean, I know why it's different now, but... And having worked at Bazaar, that was the first... And it's, I left that part of the business because, for me, it was very tough just... to meet a girl like Leah or Jonelle or anyone and take them into my office and say, here's a gorgeous girl, we're doing a great story, and I would propose those as I would propose an Intaglio or anyone. It just wasn't, it was no thought of me. It's like, here's the beautiful girl, here's the story. To me, she's equally as beautiful as any other girl, and it would be flat out no. And I would get the answer no, some people would hedge around, and then other people were just like, as I said, you know, you might have thought Leah looked light, but she wasn't light to some of the editors there, and for me that was very disturbing. You know, that was the first time in all the years that I'd done this that I'd clearly realized that people were racist in the business. There are more race problems than we...
Did they actually come out and say...
Some people would... Oh, well, you know, a lot of people... I mean, you know, a lot of... Fortunately, at the time, you know, like with Leah, oh, she's too new, she's too green, and then there were just literally photographers who... and editors who now say, I love her, she was amazing. You know, there were people... I don't shoot black girls. I mean, I would get it from people's agents. I would get it from the photographer. I don't. And then 3 weeks later, somehow they had her pull, you know, the minute she hit. And, you know, the one thing that I felt great was that when I met her, I thought, Tom Ford's going to get hurt in 30 seconds. Like, there's just no ifs, ands, or buts. He will have a Polaroid, and she'll be on a plane tomorrow. Even when he, you know, when he saw her Polaroids, he's like, it's done, book her. Her own agent at the time was like, she's Ethiopian, there's visa problems, you know, I don't know. He didn't even, you know, this was a huge booking for any girl, whether it was Leah or not. And Leah sat in my office and was like, I'll do it myself. My husband has a friend in the MC in London, I will fly through London and get there myself. And the minute she got there, people were like, the next morning, Anna Wintour was like, who was that girl? Where did she come from? How come I never saw her before? And it's like, she's been around for 3 years, and... It wasn't easy. It, you know, for me, it would have just been like, if I were editing a magazine, it would have been no-brainer. Gorgeous.
I feel the same way when he says that about being an agent that I was. I felt that same way, that kind of passion that you just believe in it and you just do it. I want to say so many things, but there's Jonelle, and she's a model. And she has a question, or she wants a statement. We got to wait for the mic, Jonelle. Sorry.
I'm Jonelle McKenzie, and I'm represented by IMG. Just to touch on what you said about hair and why we have extensions, I started with my natural hair, with my afro hair, kinky hair. And then as it go along, like, I'll go to photo shoots and I'll show up, and the hairstylist will be like, oh my God, she doesn't have extensions. She doesn't have long, curly hair. Like, what are we going to do? It's always a confusion as to what to do with our hair. Hence, our agents will go, okay, just go in and get extensions. It's much easier to work with. And they never have a problem with my extensions. It's always, okay, it's straight, curly, whatever. And they'll work with it. Once we show up with our kinky hair, oh my gosh, what do we do with this? There's always a confusion.
That's exactly the reason why girls start to wear extensions. People think, you know, comedians, Chris Rock said a long time ago in one of his shows when he was a young comedian, he said, yeah, what's going on with all these black girls with all these extensions, man? He said, what are they trying to do? They trying to leave our culture? But I had to tell Chris, don't say that anymore, because it's not the reason why. It's because, you know, they can't get their hair done. Their hair gets abused by those who don't know how to work with it. And then in the end of the day, it became easier for them to work. They're not trying to be white. They're just trying to work.
Shalom shows up with curly hair, and they don't know what to do with it.
That's very so true. That's very true. Whatever's easiest for them. My darling Baron. Baron, you gotta wait a moment. I know you hold. Hey, wait. You gotta wait for a mic and all the whole system.
Oh, hi. My name is Baron.
Baron Claiborne.
Baron Claiborne.
Photographer.
I'm a photographer.
Now, that would explain hair weaves in fashion, but that doesn't explain it in the normal culture.
Okay.
And also, much fashion is very much about exclusivity. So the first people that get excluded are minorities, because that's the nature of a lot of fashion.
That's
it's polo, it's sailing, it's, you know, it's in the nature of the thing. And people act as though no one notices color. But as a black man, people notice my color quite often every day. So I find it a little weird that nobody notices color when it comes to discussions.
Well said. Boy, you felt like you said a mouthful just then, didn't you? Well, you threw that mic away. It was good. Yes, Nicole.
Hi, I'm Nicole Moore. I'm the editor of thehotness.com. As you know, Bethann, I read blogs all the time. There's a big, and this is to go on what you just said, Baron, and also what you just said, David, about what models look like and advertorial pages versus editorial pages. So on Gawker.com, for example, and Jezebel.com, they have two big features about this whole discussion. They have the most posts than they ever had in their existence. It's like 500 different comments on it from different people in the industry. And
is it since this all started, or so it's all been happening, or it's what
this,
do you mean?
This started in the last 2 weeks with your WWD cover and with the New York Times story yesterday, and also with Vivian Westwood's comments in the Telegraph. So,
do you know about the Vivian Westwood comment?
Okay, Vivian Westwood, I guess it was yesterday's paper,
yes.
London Telegraph, made a big statement saying that, you know, why are we acting like, you know, magazines aren't racist? They are racist. There needs to be black girls in magazines. I'm stepping up to the plate, and I'm calling it as I see it. There needs to be more people booked in major magazines and in fashion shows. She had gone to, obviously, quite a few fashion shows and didn't see any black girls on runways.
And she compared Naomi Campbell's 7
yes.
to Kate Moss's 24.
8 to 24, right,
eight
exactly.
To 24.
Let's get the numbers right, because, you know, then they'll make a big to-do if the numbers
are
wrong.
They put down 7, so I went with the 7 that I saw. I know it was 8, but, you know.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But when most of the comments, it was so very interesting to me, because everybody got so caught up into it, and a lot of people ended up identifying their race when they made their comments, which was also very interesting. But how Chanel Iman and Leah Cabetti, these two girls were very different black girls than other black girls. So what you're saying does have some resonance, and it is true, because even white and black, black girls don't even see those two girls as being African.
Yes.
So I'm very moved by how impassioned you are, Sister Iman, by what you're saying. But it's the public and how they see these girls, which resonates obviously within, it's all a reciprocal relationship that we all have with the magazine industry as producers, as designers, as writers, and as consumers. So you get editorial pages when I looked at that same story today. There are 9 major magazines, only 3 of them use black models in editorial, but all 9 of them had advertorial pages with black people. So I'm saying, as a consumer, now I'm not taking myself out of the industry. One of the big questions on these blogs was, how can society, meaning everyday laymen, how can we affect editorial pages? Because the important thing about editorial pages is, great that advertising is on point, because black women, we buy over 20 billion. We've spent over $20 billion in accessories and apparel last year. So now. But the thing about editorial, when you don't see a black face in there, and I love this comment somebody made on one of the posts, editorial pages are aspirational. It's not about buying products, though. It's about seeing yourself on a page, being inspired, being empowered, so other black girls, and it is important to have black girls with natural hair. It's very funny, now that we've gotten on Glamour magazine, the next 3 issues are going to feature black women, and she makes a point, with natural hair, you know? But it is important, because you need, as Baron says, because it reflects in the culture
fresh.
Of other black girls and what you wear and how you see yourself. It's not about seeing yourself as being out of style, in style, seeing yourself as being other and seeing yourself marginalized. That's very important, and that's what I think we're all trying to talk about. So I'm asking the panel, what can we do, people in the industry and also, but mostly people outside of the industry, how can we make a change to change the editorial pages? What I mean, I've
this
probably only been
to
3 fashion shows in my life, and I'm a writer, but I don't cover a lot of fashion, but I want to be able to say, I want to be able to say I can make a change within the book. Can I make a change? Or is this something that just is insular within the industry, within designers and models? Like, how can everyday person, like if I buy Gucci, can I affect who I see on the runways at a Gucci show?
No, I don't.
You stop buying it, you will.
I don't, honestly, people say that, you stop buying the product. And, it doesn't work. I don't care what anybody says. I don't care. Believe me, it ain't going to work. They'll be like, whatever. The fact of it is, it's a bit, it's a different position than that. I think, the reason why we're all talking is, and I'm, it seems like it's such a great balance of white and black faces, it's youth and age, and it's great that we're all here talking about it, but it really is pricking the sensitivity of the liberal designers, editors, editor, and all. Pricking their sensitivity about their responsibility. It's a responsibility. It's nice. I beg your pardon?
We need more Vivian Westwoods out there.
We need more people who basically feel very passionate about. Surely it was true. It was a different time when we had Yves Saint Laurent. We had Givenchy. It was very different for them. Just automatically, they saw the beauty in a girl. But that's because girls were allowed to be models. They're not. I don't care what y'all call them. I don't care what you people that put them in them shows call them. They're not models. You use the expression because you got to say something.
Dire straits right
was
now.
Hangers,
you can say whatever you want, but they're not persons. I mean, peoples. I'm sorry.
Personalities aren't coming.
They ain't got none. And you're not helping them.
But they're not encouraged to put them
that's
forward.
That's what I, you hear me say? You hear me say? They're not helping them.
There are so many girls that are, when you have castings, it's like there are so many girls. And they're not groomed. Most of them are not groomed.
White or black.
To be models. Most of them don't know how to walk yet. They don't know how to present themselves. And, the one that shines through that has a personality that steps up and shakes your hand and smiles and
gets
has a personality, it's like you're thinking, oh, okay,
same
let's
with
hire
us.
This one because she's interesting. She's got a personality. But they're not groomed. I feel like these agencies just roll these girls out. And, the top 5% are prepared, and the other 95%, it's just take your chances, either sink or swim. You might, you might get some
that's
work
exactly
or you
the
may
truth.
Not, but they don't really groom them for the work.
So going back to Sister Iman, thank you for the reference. her point is right. Isn't it our responsibility? It's a lot of our responsibility, and there's so many girls right now. But I see a very young girl back there that has something to say to us all.
If you like...
Okay, now you got to say your name.
My name is Tracy Chavez.
Okay, Tracy.
If you, show up for a fashion shoot or something, it doesn't matter if you're like me and you look white or black, you can show up for a fashion shoot and be like, there's a bunch of white girls here, so I should act white. Or there's a bunch of black girls here, so I should act black. You should be unique if you don't look like the rest of the people there.
Good for you. And how old are you, young lady?
9.
I'm impressed. Well, you write that down. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. It's well said. Now we can get the rest of them to think like that. Okay. Yes. You do. You do need a mic. I know you have a big, loud voice, but we need a mic for the audio.
Hi, my name is Deanna Williams.
Told you.
My name is Deanna Williams, and I'm in public relations with Consumer Brands. And I just have more of a comment than anything that's directed at Tracy because she's a designer, and then our two casting directors. If the designer has the vision of how they see their clothes and how they see their shows, how much input does that consultant have to say, no, you can't use that girl because that's not how we want to convey the show? For example, Calvin Klein had a very beautiful show. We weren't represented. So I shut down because for as much as I wanted to look at the clothes, the message that I got is he didn't want me in those clothes. So I want to say that with Tracy, and I only use you, Tracy, as the designer because you're the designer on the panel, but I know that we have Ms. Wang here as well. I want to know, where did the designers and the consultants meet to say, wait, that's my vision, I understand that's your area of expertise, but we have to meet in the middle because how I see my show is very different from how you're seeing your show?
I guess I've never worked with a stylist for the show, so I don't know how that's negotiated. I do work with casting agents, and I tell them what my wishes are, and they, you know, they go after it. I mean, we had an incredible casting agent this season, and she, you know, she accessed what I wanted, you know, but she had to work for it because the girls' pictures didn't necessarily come out in the runway packages, and she had to make some phone calls to get, you know, some of the girls that I wanted to have.
She had a great, this is her, I mean, honestly, I've told this to her, but this was her best cabine. I mean, it was the greatest quality of girls. You know, she's had to grow with it, too, and get the girls that she could find. But you and your partner, she really found, and girls, whatever she instructed them to do, they did. They wanted to be models. She wanted them to be models. And these young girls came out there, and they modeled.
They want to do it, though. I mean, they do. They've been told not to express themselves so much or don't smile or whatever. And they're young. They, you know, they don't. They're young.
And we're also getting paid. If somebody says don't smile, walk straight, you walk straight, you don't smile.
Well, the other thing, again, this has kind of been a byproduct for the last 10 years. Besides kind of Prada, one of the shows that kind of became the moniker of what people started to copy when this kind of fashion show started was Jill Sander, which was a very blank, though very beautiful, it was just a very blank, very personality-less. It was about just, again, a vision, and that became a style that a lot of people copied. And it has hurt the modeling business because even when you go to Paris, and at the moment there are probably like 5 shows that are the holy grail of, you know, any fashion booking for a girl to get, and one of those being Jill Sander, one being Balenciaga, one being Prada. These are places where if girls should even walk in the room and show any form of personality, it's, you know, the hand goes down and they go blank. So it's a lot of girls go into this business training to get those bookings. So already in their minds, they've, you know, and it's also been kind of a bad effect, you know, of these designers. But on some cases and in some shows, casting directors and stylists are very, very powerful. And there are shows that I know that Leah and other girls that I know have had before, and the minute a new casting director or a certain stylist comes in, they're wiped out. And the minute that person is fired, all of a sudden they're wanted back in 30 seconds. And, you know, so some people hold a lot of weight.
They hold mucho weight. I mean, terrible amount of weight to a point, not to a fault for their work, but to a fault to, I don't know. It's just a different game. She's so right when you say that,
Lori. Yeah, but we are hired. I mean, I come into any house and I am looking to further the vision of the designer. I mean, of course I have an opinion. I also am out there in a different way. I'm doing editorials. I'm seeing models. So I'm there to tell them who's available. But it's also, you know, we're taking away the power of the designer. They definitely have a vision. They definitely have been with these clothes for 6 months, and they know what they want to get across.
But they're overworked, too, don't you think? And the fact of it, I say that they're overworked. They were always overworked because the seasons haven't changed. But they're closer to now. They bring in outside help because they need help. Isn't that
but
true?
That's like saying, you know, it's like things are a cottage industry. You start out and you're a designer and you're designing clothes. Things grow. You know, it's team effort. I mean, this is the nature of the beast.
Well, but what I'm saying by it is that at one point in life, is it because licensees, businesses grow, that they need help? Because those designers always had those seasons. Why do they now employ outside individual to step in between the relationship between that and casting a model?
Well, there's many reasons. I mean, yes, there's businesses. There's different lines. I mean, today designers can have 3 different labels that they're working on, and
so
there's a lot
that's
more
what I'm saying. They're overworked.
Business.
They're worked. Overworked. I mean, you know, we're all overworked.
They're worked, and also it's an outside eye to help them. I mean, to see things that they don't see. They're
true.
Very insulated
very
in their
true.
Work. You know, they're focused on the clothing. It's like they're not necessarily. They don't know who's out there. They don't know who's available. And, yes,
that's
we are
true.
There to bring them who's
that's
available, but
point.
With their vision.
That's right. That's a good point.
I mean,
I'm sorry. Mark Baptiste is sitting there. He's had his hand up. Microphone, por favor. In the meantime, take another question.
sorry, he'll kill me.
Good evening. My name is Mark Baptiste. I'm a photographer. 2007, what is the solution? What is the solution?
That's deep.
That's what I have to say.
Okay, 2007, what is the solution? All right, we're going to go out and have a conference. Very good question. I mean, you're bringing it right to almost a conclusion, I mean, like into a point where we really need to get to. Because that's the point of why we're talking, because we don't have a complete solution. We know who and what can be done is if we can get them to the place to do it. And that's what we're trying to do. And that's what everybody who writes blogs, editors, who fashion writers who write the word, because they're sitting there, we're all kind of suffering from it, and we're just trying to figure out how to get to that place. The next thing that we had anticipated to do, I'm going to have an initial meeting with Dion van Furstenberg, and then thereafter, we're going to supposed to meet with the CFDA. That's a meeting to be out of respect. The actuality of it is what does that really mean? The truth to me is that you keep on talking. Because I don't know that sitting down, and you can't sit down and tell designers, you just better buy, and you just better. I mean, who are you going to say that to? I actually, I could, you know, don't even let me say what I really think. But the fact of it is, I think the point of it is to have that meeting, be polite about that, but we don't stop our journey because you sit and have a meeting. You know, I mean, what happened to skinny models? They didn't stop. Not that I did they? Okay. There was someone I knew that had to, this young lady here with a hat. Nice hat, just true. It's nice when a woman wears a hat still, right?
Still. Yeah. I never take them off. Hi, everybody. I'm Ellen Christine. I'm a milliner. Hi, Laurie. Hi, Tracy. Can you guys talk about the suits a little bit? The guys higher up who create the trickle-down effect, the advertisers in the magazines, the ones who control the money, the economy, the ones who say whether it has to be homogenous, whether it should be more ethnic, whether they'll allow it to be a little bit different, or whether they need it to be safe because of the economic reality. Suits have a lot to do with it.
Like, but I think there is a lot more diversity in advertising.
No. That's what I wanted to just say to you. This, we're always going to keep it separate. This discussion is not about commercial advertising. It's only about fashion, editorial, designers, and down that road. Because advertisers, the Black Girls Coalition went against and had a DS of all of us to talk about and went up against the advertising agencies in 1993, and it changed everything. It's because we just stood there and talked, and it went all over the newspapers, and black models, down with the, and I don't know what they said, but something like that. And it was really kind of good because it started to change things. It was just immediately, you know, they want, get those girls on there, we want them on the show, get them on. And well, I wouldn't let none of the girls go. Everybody went on vacation nicely. And I'm telling you, it changed things. Mark Green was in charge then. He was part of the Commission of Business Affairs. And they were writing reports and going back and forth. It changed things. That is wonderful. If you put on your, that's why people today don't know that the black fashion model is out of date. She's no longer. Because everyone says, you're kidding me. Because when you look around this room, look what you live like. You're not in a Woody Allen movie. Yay. Right? And also, when you turn on your television, they're coming at you gangster with advertising and looks just like Terry and Robin. It's no different. They're not picking. They don't care if you're beautiful. They care about you are a consumer. They got it down. And they use black images to add to their advertising like art. I'm telling you, it's major what they're doing. So we're not mad at them. If you're saying suits as regards to publishers of magazines, then we got a conversation. Because that's a very good possibility. But I never think it's coming from, I never do. I really believe it's like the Wizard of Oz. I believe it's that little person behind a big thing turning these wheels. And that one person can change our whole destiny. I really believe that. Now you have to think all together simultaneously, who could that one person be?
Say it out loud.
I'm black and I'm proud. Just think about it, all together at one time, and send them a message that one person right now, let's, if we all just think, you can do this. Not we can do it, but they can do it. And we know that they can. And now you all know who we're talking about. Even though my little girl, 9 years old, she probably knows. Okay? So we'll be cool. Yes, young lady.
Right now, we've been discussing black models, and we've said that Leah Kibet and, what is her name, Chanel Iman, are the black models. But if you notice, right now, they are the black models, representing, you know, all of black America, wherever you may come from. Yeah, but if you notice on the shade, of the shade of color, they are more so on the lighter range, and I do believe that black people come in many different shades. So do you think that that is why there's racism, not only white against black, but within the black community about being light-skinned, too dark, too light, too chocolate, too whatever it may be?
There is a girl called Kani, who's Senegalese, who's actually darker than yourself, and she's actually doing quite well right now as well.
She's doing, and that's
well.
One model.
Yeah, we only have.
So there's three now.
We got a few. That's what I'm saying. One and two and three is not enough. But the fact of it is, when we talk about diversity of shades, we do have them. You know, it is representative. We can at least say, Kani, that they do at least find interesting. And once a girl starts to work with one client and another client, another one will take them, right? It's just a trickle
but
down.
But I'm asking, do you think that that's what caused the whole light skin versus dark skin?
We're not on their radar, child. We could pick around ourselves about ourselves all day long, and it doesn't have no effect to them.
Unfortunately, I think in this industry, in the fashion world especially, there's a lot of, if somebody else has used them, then I want to use them, or I want to use them first.
Yeah.
And if someone takes that stance, for example, and like a really, 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 really big photographer, because you know what? No magazine is going to stand up against some big photographer that's going to say, I want her. No. They say, no, okay, you want her, then you have her, okay? We just need that one person, that one stylist.
You don't think that's true either.
You don't think so?
No, I don't either.
I mean, I think if Steven Meisel turned around and he said, I want to use this guy, I want to use a black guy on a single story.
You know how hard it took
he
him
did.
To
get... He's the one that put Lee on the mat. I mean, thank God for him.
But that was approved.
But
no. But let's talk about the time you were around with him when he was trying to get Alec on. You remember that
totally.
Long struggle?
He fought
because Stephen is somebody who makes a model. But nowadays, he would say to me, Beth Ann, he started saying it 10 years ago. Hi, Tanya. 10 years ago, he said, you don't develop models anymore. There's no development anymore, Beth Ann. There's no development. So you can't develop a model anymore.
Well, the other problem, though, is I feel like now, and I even, about her talking about being lazy and the industry being lazy as well, is I feel like the other thing that really, really changed the industry almost for worse is the web, because again you have these castings that people watch and a lot of people follow what other people do, so they just go on the web next morning and say, oh, she's having a good week, I'll use her. So, you know, before we had that kind of access, you really had designers who just did what they wanted and they liked who they liked, and you didn't see any of that till 5 months later or 6 months later. Now it's all like, here are the 10 girls that are doing everything now because Vogue.com says so, so we are just going to book, you know. And it's a problem because for people who, there are some people who like who they like, and you know, again, it's with casting people and styling people. I will also say I work with Lori a lot, and there, you know, as far as that goes, there are some people who are very collaborative, and Lori is very collaborative. And there are just some people who like casting people, and some stylists just have a complete and utter vision, and they go in. And some designers just don't have the strength to say, or they need them enough to say, it's almost your vision, as opposed to some people, like she said, that just come in with a fresher eye. With maybe there's a house that's been around for years that needs, you know, kind of the rug pulled out from under them and just make them current, and that's fine. But then there really are just other players that really just come in full on with their agenda and their thing, because it's about being editorial, and, you know, because they're fashion editors, they can bring you this creed. And if that's their vision and you're trusting them, on some levels that's very bad, because it's not allowing anyone to just say, well, I don't care if she's in this magazine or not, I just like her because I like her, and I will credit Michael Kors with that, because he will stand by girls forever and ever, whether they're retired or not, even in the industry, because he likes those girls. And I wish we could go back to people liking who they like. And again, it is it makes it hard because with different clients, like, for example, Carolina Herrera, I'm looking for the carriage of someone that just looks mature and rich and wealthy no matter who she is. And then with Stella McCartney, I'm looking for a girl who can really go out there and tear up a runway. And they're two very different girls. But, you know, there are a lot of girls that fit into that mold, and it's just sad now because everyone just only sees one girl this way. And I think that is a big problem because it alleviates a lot of people.
In the green sweater.
Hi, I'm Marcia Cole, and I'm the editorial director for AmberMag.com. There's two things.
AmberMag.com?
It's the new online beauty and fashion magazine for women of color.
Yola, getting over. Well, thank you.
Go online, Beth Ann.
Okay.
There are two trains of thoughts here that we've mentioned, which is, you know, the vision of the designer. That it's a, you know, blanket face and everything. And it's still, just like echoed with other people have said, if it's one vision, if it's one blanket face and it's not a strong girl, then it should be any girl. It doesn't matter if it's black or white. If the girl isn't strong and it's not about the personality of the model, then it's just about how she carries the clothes.
Right.
Then it shouldn't matter whether she's black, white, Asian, Latina, anything. I think the other thing I wanted to point out, I've worked in publishing for 18 years, is just that when it, you know, there's kind of a chicken before the egg syndrome that always happens, that there has been times where editors of mainstream magazines have stepped out and, you know, given the editorial to women of color. Elle magazine back in the 80s did a really great spread one time of black women, black hair, Kirstie Bowser, Gail O'Neill, Karen Alexander, the hate mail that they received from Middle America.
Whatever
about
was on the cover.
Exactly. You know, the hate mail that they received from Middle America about publishing stories about showing black models and providing an eight-page story about beauty. And they said, if I want to read about beauty, I will pick up Essence. I don't want to see this in my magazine. And Elle published it, and they never did a story like that again. Never. When Ciara was on the cover of Vogue, the editorial practically was begging the audience to make sure that they buy the magazine, and they were almost apologizing that we were featuring this model on this magazine, and we were taking a chance by putting her on the June cover with her hair looking crazy for black people.
Your mic
not,
going
not,
out.
Not to the general market, but there is a, you know, it's there's a big train of thought that people do have to understand is the public who are buying the magazines accepting of, you know, black models being featured highly within editorial. And I'm not sure if that's a reality that's there. And so that we can
You're
push.
Depressing.
No, but we can push.
What? That was one of Beth Ann's least favorite things, one of her 10. And I think this is an enormous piece of the puzzle. So, you know, we can say...
Oh, you're not talking no more. That mic's dead, girl. I got rid of you.
The truth is painful.
I tell you.
Hit it, honey. That's the reality that's there. You know, you're talking about magazines that target the general market and that we want to push for more representation and more than the 12%, which is what we make up of the community, which is true and it's valid. But will the audience, will the buying public, you know, respond? And, you know, when you look at statistics of even celebrities or black celebrities being on those general market cover magazines and not necessarily selling, and then it comes down to, you know, hardcore of dollars and cents
and focus
are we
groups,
you know,
it's,
everything.
Know.
So
but then you have
okay, hold on.
You have focus groups across America. When they ask American women who they think the most beautiful woman is, they all say Halle Berry. So I doubt that, you know, if people are saying that, I doubt the whole
magazine
theory.
Well, they felt the same way about Beverly Johnson.
But when you talk about the suits and all that, that's really who the suits are. And
that's
the issue,
publishers.
Because everything has come down to dollars and cents, numbers, focus groups, every single thing.
And branding. Can you imagine a magazine being so serious about their brand?
Their brands, exactly.
Oh, dear, that's so frightening. All right, over here. Go ahead, Beverly. Give her a mic. Very good. Thank you very much, Amber. Give me the whole thing. AmberMag.com.
Marcia.
Well said.
Yes. Oh, hi. I'm Beverly Smith. I work in fashion.
Beverly, don't mess around. You got your moment.
No, I want to say, you know what? I understand what you're saying, Marcia, but I do have to say that there are lots of things that Middle America does not like in magazines, yet and still they insist on putting druggies, anorexics, and all these other folks that Middle America doesn't approve of, but because they
think get away with that,
being
though.
Stylish, in vogue, and chic, it can be done. Kate Moss... you know,
but
everyone knows
Kate.
A good old drug addict.
She's not a drug addict.
Well, an ex, a reformed
addict. Don't be talking about my little Kate.
Well, a recovering addict.
Don't be talking about some of us who used to be. Not me. So I'm too cool.
But look, they made her do like 2 days of penance, and she was able to come back, do every cover, have all the ad campaigns and all the rest of it. Something I do want to talk about, though, is that, you know, though things have changed in advertising, it's still a tough road to hoe. You actually picked up on it when you sat up there at the podium about how sometimes the booking agents won't allow the big black girls to be in an urban or an ethnic magazine. That's a problem. Having worked at Vibe, Memsor can attest, it was many a day... when it was a tough row to hoe, we never got like
I
a
love
Naomi.
That hoe.
You know, I didn't mean it like that. But you know, you couldn't get the big marquee girls. You know what
you
I mean?
Never can.
You
can
never get them.
They're all waiting for Barry Diller to call.
And you know what? And I'll even remember this. And Iman, you probably don't even remember this. But once upon a time, when Emil was the fashion director of Vibe, Manolo Blahnik refused, not Mr. Blahnik himself, but someone from his company refused to lend us shoes for a shoot. Emil called up the fairy godmother, Miss Iman. Miss Iman got on the phone to Mr. Blahnik. We had major shoes all over the place. So, and this is the kind of thing, and this is what I want to say to all the young people in the audience. You have to be a part of this. You have to make your way in this. You cannot be an outsider looking in and just criticizing this whole thing. You have to make your mark. You have to go to Milan. You have to go to Paris. If you have standing room, whatever. James Scully, you've sat me many times at the good old Gucci show. Thank you, dearest. And, you know, just, you know, you have to be a part of it. Because if you're not in it, you're never going to win it.
Yes,
and that's
true.
All I got to say.
And you need to be behind the scenes. It's very important. You know, a lot of times we talk about the model because she's the one that's the visual. We talk about the model because she's the one that is in the front. She's in the front of the line. She's the one that the designer has and the editor has a right to determine if we see or not see. But the truth of it is, it's a lot of diversity in our industry in regards to the designer, the photographer, the writer. And there, you know, people say, well, why don't you talk more about the designers? Why don't you talk more about the photographers? Because you can name a couple of photographers, but you have so many girls who are modeling, and you have so much in our industry that reflects on the runway and in the magazines. The point of it is, it doesn't leave out the fact that there are designers and photographers and editors and people who would like to be executives in magazines. And everyone doesn't even be in front of the camera. We need a lot of help behind the camera. And really, if people would desire to be photographers and, you know, come with the best quality, but it is still hard to get through. That we know. That was so, yes, dear. Sorry. That was you. That was you.
Hi. Hello, everyone. My name is Eunice Liriano. I am in fashion. I'm the marketing director over at Le Sport Sac Handbags. And I come from advertising. I come from the other side, magazines. I work with Beverly and with Memsor. I was very much part of that Manolo Blahnik story, which we all, I'm sure, in this room owned several pairs. Just to add to what Bethann said, we have to be the face. I do a lot of public speaking in schools at LIM, FIT, Parsons, and all these girls and guys want to be in fashion, but they want to be the next Iman, they want to be the next Tracy, the next, you know, Manolo. And I think that we ignore people like us in here who are in the back of it all. I never wanted to be in front of the camera. I am a voice. Every time I walk into a room, these girls look at me and they cry, and I'm just, you know, a fashion marketing person, and it really gets me so excited to see that I'm their vision. They see me. You know, I've worked in this business so many years, and I'm the only Latina in the room. I'm Dominican, born and raised in my country, and I'm the only person of color in my room, in my office, within my company, and I broke the door. I want to bring these girls in. When it's time for internships, hire us. when you look around all these magazines, there's not one black girl or one Latin girl as an intern, and that's where it starts. I was an intern at MTV, and I made no money. I made copies, you know, every day, and I come to these girls, and I hire these girls every summer because they have to see.
I don't mean to cut you off, but I want to say, are you actually saying, do you realize that you actually took baby steps to get to where you were?
I want everyone here to know that we have to hire within. We have to hire ourselves, our people, our sisters, our cousins, whoever. Nepotism all the way, let me tell you. You know, because, hey, it works. It works. So I just feel like we just need to be the person that they see in front of the room so they can be, whether they're, you know, behind the scenes. That's my point.
No, it's good. It's a good point. It's inspirational because the fact is I knew you when you worked your way up is what my point is. A lot of people, what I'm saying, like you said, wants to be at the top and they don't want to come from the bottom. But the only way you can get to the top is to come from the bottom.
But I mean, I make decisions within my company. You know what I mean?
But that's because you work from the bottom.
No, absolutely. But I think that if there was more people like us talking to these kids starting from the bottom in schools before they even come to the real world, I think it would be a different situation today.
That's very well said. Well said. Let them, in other words, let them know that it's not about being famous. It's about being successful.
Jobs that you can have.
That's
that
what I say.
Expose you to those people without being the celebrity.
Well said. Well said. Well said. Well said. You wanted to say something. You had your hand up, and now you don't have it up. I'm getting ready to go behind you. Okay, so the young lady right behind her. Yes. The blonde. Yeah. Give it to the girl lady right behind you because you're getting it together.
Hi, I'm Beldry Shane. I do fashion production at The Ground Crew. Wink at my boss back there, Audrey Smaltz. I just want to say, I am a rural Iowan here in New York. I came from Iowa. I myself want to go into publishing. And I think the main problem right now is there's a lack of saturation of this issue. I never thought about this before I came to New York. Not ever. But I'm learning. Fashion Week, I dressed Chanel Iman personally. I called home and said, guess what, guess what? My girlfriend said, who's that, who's that? They didn't know who that was.
Well, it's fashion.
Yes. Ebony came out in September. My boss is highlighted. I worked with Harriet Cole on the shoot. I said, open the magazine. Look at this. Look what happened. And they said, Ebony, can we get that in Iowa? Do I have to special order that magazine? I said, no, go to the supermarket. People don't know that this is everywhere. They do not know. These are my best friends who study fashion in Iowa, and they don't know these things. Earlier you talked about having a revolution. We can strive for revolution. What might occur is an evolution, and it started because now I'm thinking about this. I am a young person thinking about this. Hopefully in 10 years I'll be in publishing, and I'll remember this.
You get on down and party. Is that sweet or what? Is that the sweetest story? Well, you see what happens when you leave Boise, Idaho? So y'all were listening, so? It's all the same. Anyway, I made my point. Y'all were listening, I wasn't. Okay. All right. Yes, dear. But it's a very wonderful thing you say because it's very true. You want to hear something? I was told, as you get the mic, and then you go on, I was told by a very, not particularly attractive, look Mediterranean, I won't say she's Italian because I'm not sure of that, Mediterranean, dark, kind of, not particularly beautiful, you know, short. And she's talking to me, oh, I said that twice, all right. So she says, I know you're doing this whole, we were sitting at the Baby Fat Show, she, waiting for it to start. She said, I know you're starting all this stuff, and that's really great. You're talking about diversity, and I think that's really great. But I want to tell you my story, and I just want to say very quickly, she tells me about how she can't get into Vogue because of the way she looks. And she puts that on us, all of us, because that's an issue for her. I said, well, that's a hard one. I got my problems, you got yours. Because, you know, I was saying that to wait until to get the mic to her, because I wanted to say that, see, it's discrimination in different ways, because they have a club, you know, and it's fair. I've never been mad at it, because I used to spend a lot of my time in Mademoiselle. And, you know, there's a different, it's a style being a Condé Nast. It is. It's a club, so I can understand. And that's why I want you to fight to get the publishing, because we're going to need you, young lady. Well said. Go ahead, then. Yeah.
Hi. I'm really excited to be here because I feel like we live half of our lives asleep, dormant. We don't fight for anything anymore, and I'm really proud that it's packed. It's a packed room, so thank you to the panelists. Thank you to the library for having this. But I was thinking, as Mark said, what is the answer? And we turn to people who have a bigger voice than just little old me or little old you. Maybe together we have a voice, but how about the front row at the fashion shows? If the celebrities like the George Clooney's, the Kate Bosworth, the Beyoncé's, the Kanye West stop taking a week out of their lives and attending all of these shows, maybe they won't get so much press, and maybe it will affect the shows. So maybe that's a place to start. It's not to say it's all to turn to the celebrities and it's for them to solve the problems, but they are people just like us, and they feel for their counterparts. Those are their comrades. Those are their friends on the runway or missing from the runway. So if we challenge them and say, hey, why are you supporting this show? Your friend is, you know, has been trying to get into the show. Use some muscle. Use your voice. I mean, I'm here because
Terry has something to say to that. Terry, you made your mess now.
I just said that they're not going there to support their friends. They're going to get the
pictures. Hold 1 second, darling. You need this mic because we need to hear her say that.
Need to know about celebrities going to fashion shows. My name is Terry Agins. I work for the Wall Street Journal. That you know they're not there to support anybody. They're there to get their picture taken, and so
get a paycheck
and getting paid.
Yeah, and in some cases, exactly. But it's more of a publicity thing for them, so they're not there.
They have no interest.
Yeah, they have no interest.
They just they know that later they're going to get dressed by somebody, and someone will get clothes from someone. And that's pretty much the name of the game. They have no relationship. But the one great thing that you did say about all of that, not one, but the whole thing that you're saying, is that it will get to everyone because everyone is writing about it. We've had some great, great, great press. And it will continue because it's an issue. When, you know, when everybody starts talking in Paris, my dear friend Eric Broughton, he's one of our pioneer soldiers, as I call him. But he brought me the French Marie Claire that had the cover story about the same issue, society, the lack of the black image in fashion. The same, just as we were talking September 14th, that magazine issue came out in Paris. So everyone feels like, it's like, come on already, what's going on? So it's not just us in a room just saying crying. It's, you know, I'm the forerunner. But the fact of it is, we're here doing this because other people are writing about it, and it's fair to write about it. It's fair for anyone to write about it. You know, if Robin writes about it, and Rosemary writes about it, and Guy writes about it here, people read that, and it's everyone's reading it. They know it's not bullcrap. It's just how do they get around? How do we switch it up now? How do we? And we don't have the answer. We didn't come. Please, oh God! If you thought we had the answer, the only answer we have is that a conversation needs to happen. And the more conversations, the better off it is. Because the things that you learned tonight, did you know how feisty Iman was? It's little things that we learn. Mike, you have Mike somewhere, right? Someone had it.
Hello. Jason Campbell, editor-in-chief of JC Report and contributor to Style.com. Bethann, I think that, yes, I'm addressing you there. I think we cannot skirt over this issue. As well, James made this point. I don't think we can skirt over this issue of this club that you speak about. The editors at the magazine, the stylists for the shows, the designers as well. Do we see our likeness amongst this group? Do we see, when we're in Paris, when we're in these cities, the editors are usually Caucasian men and women running around, and they're the one who are the decision makers, and they're putting their likeness on the runway.
Naturally.
And in the magazines.
Naturally.
So we are not represented on that front. And again, there's something to make.
We weren't represented before, and they did it.
Well, we were obsessed.
See, I don't like going backwards. That's my problem. I don't mind if they never include us. Then we go out there and we start a little Hollywood. I wouldn't care less about it.
I could care less. You know why I used to tell my girls? When they didn't get a booking, because I had such an attitude about modeling anyway, even though I had a model agency, when the girls wouldn't get booked, they said, do you want to belong to them? Do you want to be with them if they don't want you? Later for them. Okay. But that's a sorry, I'm going to let you speak, but I just want to say this because it gets me a little fired up. Okay. The point of it is that it's always been their show. Well, we're just extras in this show. And so even though I know what you're saying is right, I just want to let you know that before this stage, we had a great stage. And that's the problem that I have.
Fair enough, and I respect that.
But you do have to understand now that
the mafias are very strong. For example, English mafia, the cognoscenti hold so tightly together. It's such a collusion. They scratch each other's backs. They're the stylists. They're the models. They're the editors. And they hold those groups and those clubs very, 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 very tightly.
True.
And that's not an excuse. Let's look at ourselves as well. I'm in all of these cities. I see a lot of these faces, but do I have a relationship with these editors? We don't know each other. We don't have our own clubs. Now we're starting a discourse here. Now we're starting to kind of come together a bit. This feels really good right now. It feels great. But there's a lot of there's a lot of people in here that we don't know each other. Why don't we have our club? Why aren't we championing our club?
Because it's not
more
our show.
More?
That's okay. The whole point.
Well, make it our show. Make it our show. That's what we have to do. So we all need to know each other. We have these powerful black editors in here right now. I need to know Robin Givhan a bit closely.
Uh-oh.
I need to know the rest of you a little bit closely. Why don't I know you guys? I'm a force. I'm a face in this industry. I'm in these cities. We pass each other, you know, going in and out of shows. Why are we not talking?
Okay, you're so friendly. He's so friendly. He's so friendly.
So, you know,
he's so social. Where's my little 9-year-old? Okay, let me help you out here. Lord have mercy. Gee whiz. Okay. He wants to know us. Okay, let me explain something real quick because I know I'm going to start running out of time because they're looking at us like, you know, we didn't pay all the rent. This is something that I want to say. Thank you, darling. The thing that I'm very glad, too, because you bring it to a nice place of closure. This has been very good for all of us because it's true. It puts us in a place where we can all start feeling like there's something that we're all having a reason to meet and be together and to talk about something. It does put us all in the same place. When we started September 14th, the one thing that I found that was so magnificent, there was a young girl from a college. And there was Iman, and then there was Naomi, and then there was Andre, and there was all these different people who were such a mix of people, difference in culture and age. And yet every single person was equal. I felt like wasn't that true, Audrey?
Yes.
It was truly like, it was like two, you know, it was like 75 soldiers. And it was all, everybody was equal. Nobody had any, and that's the genius of it all. The point of it is to go out this way, and the reason why I asked these nice people on my left and right to sit with us tonight and talk is because they do, no doubt, have expertise. They have the experience that a lot of us don't have. We may be onlookers, but we don't have that. And the fact is that coming together here may be the only time you socialize with Robin Givhan. But the point of it is that this would be the most important place you socialize with Robert Givhan. what I do want to say too is thank you very much for that because it is true. We won't necessarily have our own show, but this is our show. And everybody in here, white, black, Latina, Asian, believe me, we're all in the same mindset because something needs, we want change. That's the reason why we've all come, and that's what's so important. I do want to get to you because I know they need to get to me. So you go ahead because you had your hand up for some time. I'm sorry.
Hello. Hi. My name is Wendell Brown. I work at Esquire magazine.
Wendell Brown.
Yeah, hello. I'm here.
Hello.
What I wanted to say is that Esquire, we all know what that is. We all know what that means. That is a very waspy, old school. I have the luxury of working in a place like that, bringing change. Every month, we don't shoot models. Mainly we shoot real people. We cast real people. I have the luxury of having the position to say, and I have to say it every single month, we need some other people in here. We need someone like this, we need someone like that, we need somebody Latin, we try to mix it up. Luckily, I have the power where they listen to me and I can do that. Never happened before I was there. And I know when I leave, it probably won't. There's a serious, serious lack of diversity in the industry. I mean, major. And I know why that is. Because when you are in school, when you are in college, very few people can afford to work for free or take an internship where they're going to need to not only show up, but look cute, look the part, go to the restaurants, do all that. Fashion is a very exclusive industry. It's about that lifestyle. So there's a very serious lack within the industry. But the other thing is, every month when I bring this up, they say, oh, yeah, you're right. They don't think about it. It's not their agenda. And
it's
I don't hate
their,
them
it's
for
not
it.
On their radar.
They don't take it away from me,
that's
but I have to always remind them. And that's a major problem.
That's a major problem. That is so true.
And that's responsibility. That's being responsible and taking the action.
That's exactly right. So everybody wants to speak. If you all can speak at one time. Paul, how much time do we have? Tell us, because we got to wind down.
As much as you want.
Don't say that. He's a good man. This is a good landlord. Wait, was it you? I can't remember. Mikhail, did you want to? You sort of, kind of, huh? You still brewing on it?
Well, I wanted to. I wasn't going to say anything. I'm Michaela Angela Davis, and I'm a writer, and I'm on the board of Black Girls Rock. And this young woman, sister, the nine-year-old, touched me when she talked about having to manage herself in this world. And so it made me think a bit about all the young girls, because I used to bleed over magazines. You know, and I was a stylist for many years, and when I was a young girl, I used to rip the heads off the model so I could just look at the dress, because I was very clear that that world wasn't my world, but I loved the clothes so much.
You knew
much.
That?
Yeah.
I never thought that.
Just pop the heads off, you know. Look
wow.
At, but what the isolation that we as editors feel often when you're sitting in the seat and you're one of the few and you're seeing all these white faces go by. And I remember that show that what Gautier did, where it was just Kirsten McNamee. And it was all black girls.
Mm-hmm.
And we're sitting there. I remember I'm thinking, oh, this is fun. And I feel the room shift around. Like, everyone's feeling very uncomfortable. And I'm feeling, and they were, it wasn't like jungle print. No one had bones in their noses. They would just fly, you know. And what was wonderful, I felt how fortunate all the white people in that room were to have that moment to feel just for a minute how I feel every single season. But more than that, the young women who feel so isolated by looking at the ones behind us, the ones that we're supposed to have as interns or mentors, they're coming to us so wounded and so hurt because they don't see anything close to them. Like, when we went to the Todd Oldham show, you would literally roar when, like, Tyra walked down the runway, or even still, Naomi makes you insane. Like, oh, I want that. I want to feel alive. I want to be free. I want to feel alive. And the models now feel so not alive. Like, they look so dead. Like, they're, you literally can see their hip bones click in place. No, it's, so as a young girl, to look at that is glamorous? For me to look like I just crawled out of Auschwitz? Not to mention, you know, I mean, it's that bad. There was one time, if I wasn't on the front row, I would have left. A girl, I just wanted to give her a steak sandwich. You know, but.
I know.
But it is this lack of thought of who's behind us. And I think it's a cultural problem, but that young, the nine-year-old, it broke my heart, but she's so articulate that there was a hope right behind it.
Yeah.
But there are young girls trying to manage who they are in a world that is so not for them so against them.
Okay, so let me just say one thing before I give Lori, because Lori needs to address this too. Yeah, I agree with you. I want to say something. You know, I always used to say for a long time that, it was great before fashion mainstreamed. Because the great thing about fashion, it was called the garment district, and then it became named fashion. Do you know how nice it was for so long when it wasn't part of the mainstream, because it was a little isolated place that people went to who only had something to do with the business.
Market week.
Yeah, exactly. It was never something that all of you would have known about. And it was isolated to that. It was a small island. And the fact of it is that it's mainstream now, because little girls I grew up with could care less about fashion. They had style. They didn't need anything about fashion. They didn't need to look in any magazines. I did, because I was so attracted to Carol Lindley with long blonde hair. That was my desire. But it never affected my thinking or who I was. It just depends on who you are, if it affects you. And believe you me, to desire fashion and want to be in the looking at the fashion shows, you need some real parenting. Not talking about you, Ms. Kayla, but I know the fact that you need some real parenting to have right on your tail to be talking to these kids, helping them. Go ahead, baby.
No, I just want to say, I mean, it is a cultural issue, and it's beyond black or white. I mean, when you're looking at those models, it's like, it's such a small percentage. It's like, who's 5'10"? Who weighs 100 pounds? I mean, this is a big problem all across the board, and I think that's what's happening in this country, I believe, more than anywhere else. But it's like we are looking at these standards that are not attainable. I mean, this is what's going on. And I just want to say that I just think it's a bigger issue than black or white. I mean, it's huge.
Yeah, and it's true when you say, I always believe, for me, I just want to say that I always believe skinny works because I come from design. So for me, skinny worked. And when I was a model, I looked like, as I said before, I looked like I was from Biafra. I was very skinny. So, I mean, it doesn't affect me when I have to think about looking at a magazine and thinking, oh, my God, you're not talking to the heavy woman. I don't think heavy women should be looking at the magazine being offended by what they see. But they are claiming it. And I think they're stepping out of their neighborhood to come into a neighborhood that they shouldn't even take on. I think fashion is fashion, and then we have clothes. And clothes are not bad. It's not like go to 14th Street and find yourself something off the street. There's too much clothes out there in the world to be sitting there thinking about, oh, God, why didn't they reflect me? I mean that in one way when I'm talking about women who are basically so different than what you see in a magazine. What I don't like is that they have, when we have been up the hill and then we fall all the way back. That's what I don't like. I don't like achieving something and then someone rips me back down the road. If we never had it, take your own ride. But once we've had it and we've gone all the way back, that's the problem I have. Because then I would think, you know what, maybe it's not for us. If you can't do computer work, you don't try and go and sit down at a computer. You just wait to learn it. But if they're not going to let you in, I would never have a problem. It's the fact that we've been up that road. We've done it. We've succeeded. I have so many girls that I would like, just up on my film, that I can remember from the 80s and 90s, so many models that I can't even name them all. Stephanie Roberts, Beverly Peel. I can name girls that I can't name, but you can tell I can't name because I only named two. That is so many girls that were there, all through Vogue, all through Elle, all through Bazaar, all through Mademoiselle, Glamour, all of the magazines. And now everything is gone and it's over. That's what I don't like. If I'd never seen it, I could care less. I would go to tap dance school. Okay. Terry asked, tell us about Chambre de Syndicat, which is the group that manages the fashion shows in Paris. Good point. And the syndicate that also manages the fashion shows in Italy. Have we approached them? And the point is no. And the fact of it is, the reason, good question, is you start in your own, backyard. Well said. I told you I was going to need you. And then afterwards we go forward. But the one thing I've always felt is truly that the Italian, I've never, the only thing I've always believed about Italians, I used to tell my models, don't go to Italy, don't go to Italy, don't go to Italy, because you never work in Italy. And for the top girls, top designers like Versace or Gucci, who at one point used girls of color, that's for the top girls. But if you're a girl coming up, you don't break in Italy. Italy likes women to romance them, but they don't like to have them on the runway or they won't put them in fashion and things like that. Paris is another thing. I'm sorry to say it, but that's the truth. Paris is another thing. And the truth is that you can start to approach it, but you just have to, we're just working our way up to how we approach it, you know, and that's when you should utilize the head of, like, the CFD, talk and see which approach makes the most sense, that you make the most sense at them without offending them at the same time. Because for me, I just like to write a letter to everybody, you know, and just tell them all off, you know. But there's an approach that you have to take and sort of to see how it goes. And we know that. That's why we get together in an insulate kind of like group and start talking about our approach.
I have a question for you. When does the process start of creating the cards that go out before Fashion Week? So say, you know, New York Fashion Week is first week of February. Mm-hmm. When do the agents start preparing the runway packages? When do they decide which cards are going
for,
out?
For the January shows, we usually start in about, I would say, like October, November.
So now?
Yeah. But then we start coming up with ideas, or how we're going
to
package it.
So it's good to make
lot.
Noise now, and then it's
Absolutely.
Good to make noise again
Absolutely.
In January so that the designer's here, and then it has to continue.
See, just so you'll know, because we're closing down now, we're going to start to... I don't know. You have to go to the bathroom, or you have to go... Okay, all right. Okay. Wait. Okay, you say your question, then I'm going to say, that's it, fine. I know, that's who I saw.
I've been raising it for like 10 minutes. They can attest. But anyway... along what Tracy was saying, I think it's the designer's responsibility, because even today I got a phone call. I'm Christine, by the way. I work at a modeling agency. And she's like, and I know it wasn't the designer, of course. She's like, I want blonde hair, blue eyes, bam. Okay, who am I supposed to transfer this to? So I transfer it to the person that I know has those particular models. They're calling in all the time asking for brunette. I need a tall, this skinny, like she was saying. I need blonde hair. I need blue eyes. They're always asking for this. And I'm thinking, like was mentioned earlier, there's a disconnect between the designer and the actual person that's working for them. So if the designer was strong enough and said, okay, listen, this is what I want. I want a black model, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 or 6, whatever, how many I want, and then I want, you know, this type of European or whatever I want, then they're strong enough in their opinion and their what they want, and then it's going to get out there. Then it's going to be on the runways. Then it's going to hit the magazines. So it's going to have a triple effect, but it starts from, you have to get the root of the problem and then go that way. If you're not attacking it where it's, you know, starting, you're never going to solve the problem.
That may be a very good point, but the fact of it gets even better. The designer... The casting person that calls your agency doesn't have to say types. They have to say, send me models.
Right, but normally
they say,
I want this particular model.
That's what I'm saying.
Like I would say, do you want
That's because everyone has gotten very lazy. They want everything to be edited for them. Just what we were saying before, everybody has gotten very tired. Everybody's very lazy. And less to do, better off they like it. So okay. You are all part of the Black Girls Coalition. That's exactly right. I just want to do one favor. I'm sorry, I'm squeezing up because she's been screaming. We're solid.
Hi, my name is Shandi, and I work for a major stylist, and I'm not going to say his name. But I think that in saying that it has nothing to do with economics is not correct, because I've been on. You know, shoots, I can say for Louis Vuitton, and they were saying, and if you notice that all of the runways, all the major runways have Asian girls in them, and I overheard suits speaking at the shoot saying that, oh, you know, we need
China.
To have...
It's all about China.
Right, and the market there is so huge and so important, and all you need to do is have that Asian girl, and then that can go in every magazine and every Asian magazine, and that's the market that they're really, really concentrating on now, and I think that, you know, when you are at another show that we work on where there will never be a black model in that show. But in the front row, it's every major black celebrity. And I think, you know, I just want to, and then like they're rapped about in the song. And I just want to say, I cannot believe that you can come and sit in the front row at these shows and go to the after parties and then put these designers in your songs. And, like, you're not represented at all. And I hear everything, you know, sitting in on meetings, whether it's for major, major, major advertising clients to more commercial clients to – and we do, you know,
everything. And
well, I know your frustration. I understand that. You're right about that. We all have said that for a long time. I know it's a terrible thing to see somebody, as Guy said, they can put rap in the runway, but they don't put black in they can put rap in the front seat, but they don't put rap in, I mean, I can't say anymore. I'm so sick.
But I do think
But you understand, I can't let you go too much longer because I gave you a break and you did it. Because we do have to close. But I want to say, because we have to say some things so you won't think this is all just a talk. The point of it is as he said about the coalition and things of that nature, this is something that is rolling forward. I call it the slow tsunami. But the fact of it is it will have its effect. There is continuance to talk and to raise, but it has to be, first it was to do it broader, to see what we would get out of this. But the next thing is to be more specific and to go specifically at who we have to talk to. And there will be a change. It's going to change. And I just want you to know that it's not for nothing, and I appreciate you all for coming. And just be how you would like the world to be. Just every day, just be that. And I think it's a very critical thing.
Bethan, since you've so kindly referred to me as a landlord, I would say that this landlord invites you back. It's called the New York Public Library, and the word public, I take it very seriously. So let's thank the talent and Bethan Hardison for her passion. Thank you very much.
Oh, wow. Thank you very much.